Hey, 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 it's your girl, Jenny Steele. I'm back, Diddy back. We are still in November and we are celebrating our 3 years. We're still celebrating all month, but guess what? The best people to celebrate with today, our sponsor, Mr. Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And the top show for last year, 2023. Around black men's mental health and well-being, Dr. Ron Dodsrow up in the building. What are you saying?
I'm back. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm excited.
About time. Been trying to get... People's calendars is full. But guys, welcome back.
As I said.
Ron, and welcome to the show, Goody.
Thank you. Glad you got the big budget out this week.
We'll discuss that budget a little bit later, but listen, life of a top boy research, 1 year. Mm. 1 year went quick. But before we touch on the research, because the last time we had you here, it was Black Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. I think I'd had about 6 weeks of shows. Your show ended up being top streams for 2023, which is amazing. Mm. We're now in 2024, getting ready to plan for the top show of 2024. But we touched on a little bit of the research because it wasn't kind of, I think you guys was going to be doing some bits and pieces. We didn't want to talk about it too much. Yeah. But before we get to that, our main sponsor, Winston Good, in the building.
Glad to be here, finally. Making it happen.
This is a moment. So if it snows later on today, guys, we know why. Listen, Winston, you sponsored the show for 3 years. Why? Yay.
Natural progression. You know, we talk about the work that we do, but it's not often that we are able to share the resources.
Yeah,
and speak to the masses in a different way. So for me, it was a natural progression to do this in a way where professionals can come in, parents can come in, you know, and talk about these projects in a meaningful and practical way.
Yeah.
So as I said, so it gets out to the masses regardless, whether that's children, young people, families, professionals, there's something there for everybody to take away.
Yeah, 100%. And we've definitely done that. Mm. We've definitely done that. So we appreciate you.
You're welcome. As I said, you know, I've seen other professionals here. But I'm glad that you saved the best for the end of the year.
We definitely have. And look, it's the same week that we celebrate. So we have a 3-year anniversary party this Thursday. So I hope all my guests are ready to turn up because most I've got definitely. A special event for you guys. So I'm, can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. But no, thank you. And we appreciate you. We appreciate you. Now, what I want to know is the research is Dr. Ron, Angie Venice. How did you guys come together? Now, I know anyone who was at the event last week, they would have heard little bits and pieces of how you guys come together. And I must say, what an amazing event. What an amazing event. Presentation on point. The room was full. The questions. The panel. Woo! Mm,
definitely.
The panel. You know, shouts out to Shoka. Shouts out to Mark Robinson, the barrister. And a special thanks to Jermaine Wong. A very special, special evening that was. Mm,
definitely. And, you know, and before Ron touches on that, you know, we, for a subject matter like this, you have to get into the nitty-gritties of that work and bring people to the forefront who are actually experiencing some of these issues.
Yeah.
And when we look at the lived experiences, you know, as me and Ron have spoken before, Andrew, it's very rare that we hear from fathers,
yeah,
you know, who have experienced violence or, you know, homicides, you know, so... Getting it live, direct, raw as it is, you know, and it's still something that's, you know, going on for them, an emotional subject matter, you know, but to have that in the room, yeah, you can't get any closer than that.
No.
You know, so for me, we just have to understand the nuances of what's happening here and who better than to, you know, who better for us to kind of like partner with and have that specialist in the room
yeah.
than Dr. Run.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. 100%. It's true, though, because I feel like, you know, alongside your presentation, the panel was full of so much experience in all different ways that came back to one. So for you two, how did this the process of the research come together? Because quite, you know, it is a very powerful, you know, the life of a top boy. It says what it is on the packet. You can't, oh, maybe it's about, no, you know what it's about. It's very powerful.
Yeah, it packs a punch straight away, the title alone.
Yeah.
You know, so even in terms of, you know, getting to where we are now and that process, you know, and if I think rightly back to it, it's, you know, I saw this post floating around on social media, you know, asking for all those organisations that are working with gang-affiliated young boys across London. He wants to do some research.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I sat down there and I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought to myself, it's something that we need to do, but I never had the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
Now this something's presented itself to me, do I go for it? You know, so as I said, you know, I toured over it and I just thought to myself, how is this clinical psychologist going to get into our organisation and also into the heads of a lot of the boys that we're working with?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, is he going to fit, you know? So, as I said, you know, I reached out to him. We had a conversation. You know, he was eager to get, you know, he was eager. You know, to start participate with the boys that are working. I'm saying, nah, we've got to get to know you. I need to trust you. Yeah. I need to be able to sell you.
There's a big piece of information.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
You know, that you're going to be taken from them and they've got to feel safe. Yeah, telling you.
You know, we're asking these boys to bare their souls in a sense, yeah, and be vulnerable with a stranger that they've never seen, never seen on our floor, you know, never mixed with us, you know. So I had to take that leap of faith and get to know Ron.
Yeah,
you know, forget about the titles that he holds. I just had to get to know Ron.
Yeah,
yeah, and to feel within myself, you know, can me and him form that bond.
Yeah,
can me and him work together. And ultimately, can I bring those boys in front of him?
Yeah.
So this is not just about, you know, seeing Ron, you know, on the Monday and by Friday he's working with those boys. The same way how we build the relationship with the young boys people, that we work with and the young people, I had to build that with Ron.
Yeah.
You know, and thankfully that leap of faith has turned out to produce that amazing piece of research as we know it as the life of a top boy.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And we know how difficult it can be to speak to our young people about meeting new professionals and them not wanting to repeat their whole life story, because that's one thing that they just dislike. If another new professional comes in, they don't want to share. So how was that as a process for you? Because obviously, as Winston said, you've got to come in, you've got to, you've presented something, it's all exciting, but now you've got to get to know the boss, the founder, and then you've got to get to know the young boys and men that you wanted to actually get deep with.
I mean, just to, I guess, add some context, that when I was like looking around for organisations that work with young black boys, young black men engaged in community violence, I think it's worth to note that nobody responded back to me.
Listen, remember, I was hosting the panel. When you said that, I was like, what? Because we are in a time where everyone is chatting. Everyone's chatting online. Everyone's saying, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this. But then you've got someone who's saying, listen, I'm going to do this piece of research. We know that we've got community violence. We know that this is happening. We know that we need to get to the bottom of it. We keep hearing about PTSD. We keep hearing about trauma. And when I heard you say that, I was like, no way, mad.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, it is. And maybe I was a bit naive to think that everybody would be jumping on board with it.
I think I would be thinking everyone wants to jump on.
Me too.
100%.
I thought I'd missed the boat, in essence, yeah? Until we had that conversation, and he said, you're the first person to contact me.
Yeah.
In the times that we're in right now, with the issues and the solutions that we're trying to pull from the community, this is what's going on. Wow.
So that was tough. I'm not gonna lie. Like, it was really tough to, and again, you have to remember that I'm still working to boundaries and deadlines because I need to do this research to then become a doctor in clinical psychology. So I've already got my own time constraints.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what? Like, how could community organisations not want to jump on board with this? It wasn't even making sense to me.
Yeah.
Time was going and going. I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to actually drop this topic. I'm going to have to do something else.
Oh.
Because if I don't actually... Because I knew that time was going to be a massive factor.
Yeah.
I'm working with a population that I knew probably wouldn't want to really... It's going to take me longer for that buy-in.
I'd set out
enough time to, I guess, work with organisations for them to understand who I was, why I was doing this,
and then
hopefully have some time again to
to
be around young people for them to get the same idea.
Yeah.
So when that wasn't happening, obviously time is still going on, and I'm like, rah, I might actually have to just drop this whole topic and start something else because I'm not getting
it's
in touch with anyone.
Because you know I'm in the planning. For some research, I'm in the planning for some research for 2025, and I'm thinking, these schools, they're just gonna get on board, and the families, they're gonna be good. Now I'm panicking.
No, don't panic. But what I will say is, do that bit first. I wish that,
and that's the advice that you've given me, which I've taken. I am literally now saying to the school, let's get these things in place now before 2025.
It has to be done.
But now I've heard a little bit more of what you're saying, I'm like, I'm glad we've had these conversations because I can't believe it. Yeah. So I'm sitting here thinking the schools are going to jump all over this, but I might be struggling as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lot. I'm not going to lie, it was a lot. So when, obviously, reached out to Winston when he kind of got back in touch, and it's mad because I proper remember where I was. I was like, I think I was outside Euston Station. I don't know why, but I was like, rah, he's actually like, he was like, let's put a time in a diary, let's chat. And I guess he just wanted to hear a bit more about who I am as an individual, why I was attempting to do this stuff. And I guess it's kind of why I took a different approach last week at the event, that I wanted people to get a bit more of an insight into who I am.
Yeah.
So I mean, Winston seen me in various different kind of venues, environments, talking about the research and doing workshops and presentations. But last week, I think it was about kind of burying my soul a bit, actually. Yeah. Like, I really wanted people to understand.
You really went into who
Jenny, I don't talk about myself, you know, and I'm quite, maybe I'm a bit guarded with my kind of like background and like what I've been about. So I don't really
understandable. Because remember, this is a first for you. And then the research has just gone. You guys have been outside the UK. You've been doing things here, doing things there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've been sending it out. You don't even know what rooms it's been in.
Because not everyone's going to say, I used
it in a meeting last week. You're just not. Some people are just going to use it.
And I don't think I was ready for it. I'm not going to lie. I don't think I was ready for it to blow up as much as it has.
Why not?
Maybe I was still jaded by the fact that community organisations hadn't been in touch. So actually I thought, is anyone actually even going to pay this attention? Yeah. Like, I've reached out to people, silent. So why would I think people are going to be interested actually? So when it's kind of taken off the way that it has, I was like, rah, I don't think I was actually really ready for this at all.
And it's gone.
Yeah.
What's happened with it has blown up quick.
Newspaper, this, that, it's
blown up fast.
And obviously at the same time, you have to remember that I'm still getting to know Winston. So why is he getting to know me?
I'm
getting to know him and understand, rah, this guy's actually well connected. So again, that obviously wasn't on my radar for me to know.
That's a bit disrespectful.
How?
Of course I'm well connected.
Yeah, but how am I meant to know that? I wasn't meant to know that.
But you should have done your research.
You see this guy?
You should have done your research.
I hear it.
Do you understand?
I learn on the job. I learn as we go.
Exactly. Well, come on now. We're big in the business.
The whole team is called the plug. No, but again, the plug.
I'm not from Lambeth.
Okay.
And actually, I don't know how Lambeth operates. As I kind of mentioned in my talk last week, I'm a Wandsworth boy.
Yeah.
So when it comes to Lambeth, actually, I didn't really know who was who, what was what.
Yeah.
So I say that because I was learning whilst being around Winston that, right, okay, he knows this person in Lambeth, he knows this person in Lambeth. When I met him, I didn't know to expect this. Yeah.
You're going to take this guy seriously. When he backs something, boy. Yeah. Definitely. All the way.
And the thing is, as much as we laugh and joke, it is a serious, deadly matter. You know? So, you know, when we cut through the tape, you know, and if, even if people ever heard the transcripts, yeah, it's eye-watering.
It's true.
Eye-watering.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and, you know, you get those goosebumps reading what our young people are really going through and what they're involved in. So, you know, I don't want to go too much and spoil a bit of the thunder in terms of, you know, when we start, when we first started working with the first young person that came to do their interview, and the way how they looked at you and were still wary, and were just thinking, I'll give him a chance, Winston, because it's you, I'll give him a chance, you know. So I'll let you pick up the story from the first young person that came in.
That was you know what, that ended up being my shortest interview, you know. So like the interviews range from his, which was 20 minutes to about 2 hours, you know. But with this young man in particular, I guess it was natural. Like I kind of assumed that people would be a bit guarded, they'd be on edge, they don't really know who I was. And I'm often talking about, I guess, this idea of a transference of trust. Those young people trust Winston.
Yeah.
So actually, when it got to a point where he felt like he could trust me, it was then, I guess, just passing on that level of trust. Yeah. But obviously not completely, because again, I've only known these guys for a short period of time.
Yeah,
so
of course,
whilst they're still trying to find ways to trust me a bit, there's obviously parts of them were like, I don't know who this Don really is. Why am I going to tell him all this stuff? So with that young boy in particular, that was very evident in his interview.
Remember, they don't know what's going to happen.
Do you know what
I mean? You're thinking, okay, we're going to do a piece of research, it's going to be typed up and we're going to do a presentation, but actually it's gone further than that. We're doing 1 year anniversary event. What's going to happen 2 years? I can see conference, Life of a Top Boy as a conference for the day. Do you know what I mean? With schoolboys coming and there being workshops by you and workshops by Shot. Like, I can see this. So for them, it's also, wow, like, even though something bad happened in my life, look at the good that's coming out of it for somebody else. You can't imagine that someone's gone through, as you said, the things that they've seen, the things that they've been involved in, that is actually going to be beneficial for so many other people. Not just young people, but people working in the field, professionals like us, all of the insights it's going to give us for our work. Mark, the barrister, saying that now, you know, he's going to be looking into bringing someone like Ron into the courthouse to talk about the effects of, like, listen to what, like, wow.
Yeah, it's spread like wildfire.
It's just like someone lit a match and it just went, and he's serious about that as well. He's very, very serious. And then, you know, Shocker's like, we need to see something extravagant come out of this, which means 10 different things is going to blow from this, because no one's going to do one thing. There's going to be a film, a this, a that, a blah. It's amazing.
It's amazing, but what people don't also realise is just two black men. You know,
exactly
pushing all of this. And it's a lot.
It is a lot.
You know? It's 100%. A lot. You know, as much as it's, you know, taken us to Colorado, you know, potential for learning days in the Caribbean, you know, potential to go different other parts of the world, you know, and all people see right now is 54 pages of a research report. I don't even know how many words the original piece was.
I don't know why I've gone out of my mind. Thousands, dude. Honestly, 36,000.
There you go. Condensed down into 54 pages. And then, as I said, from the transcripts, do you know what I mean? Looking at that, you know, there's a documentary in there.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, there's a documentary in there, you know.
And there's then probably a short film.
You know, so we're looking at different avenues, yeah, but trying to juggle all of that, you know, it's tough for us. You know, we've got full-time jobs.
Yeah. Mm. And also, I think what gets missed at things like the anniversary is that people forget that the people delivering today are the ones that are doing the work tomorrow.
Mm.
So there's some people that sit in the space and they can say, well, you need to do this, do that. But hello, tomorrow, while you lot go to your job, we're actually going back to work with those same young people that we're telling you about this evening. And that's the bit that gets missed. It's not just the event and then there's nothing. Any of us could have took any form of phone calls last night, this morning, today, and it just changed your whole day. So it's definitely, you know, the insights of it need to be shared a bit more so people understand that it took X amount of months, X amount of bonding, relationship bonding, and those relationships are still building now.
Yeah, definitely.
Because these boys have trusted, you know, these boys and young men, they have trusted you, and now they're seeing something else coming, and they're probably growing in who they are. And who they're going to be. And who knows, one of them might just stand up and say, listen, I'm coming on board. Like, what are we doing? Because now I'm 110% ready. And that would be an amazing thing. And I can see it coming.
It is coming. 100%. Yeah, I can see it coming.
I can see it coming. Definitely. It has to.
100%. Yeah.
Because you've set something now. And it's not over. It's just begun.
Boy.
Well done, guys. Honestly, like, seriously, just well done, because I see it. I'm behind.
And that's what I said, so you know.
I can see it.
I just said you're a bit behind the scenes in a number of ways. And also, it, in a sense, you're a sounding board for what's happening going forward.
Yeah.
You know, so as much as, you know, we've got a fantastic team, you know, with everybody behind you, Venice, so no matter what the work that we're doing, yeah, we all play a part into the research and where it goes going forward.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it's not just about me and Ron, but it's about the whole team.
Yeah.
And how we navigate, you know, through the work that we do, and are making sure that, you know, these boys who have been part of the research are well looked after, irrespective of whether me or Ron are about, that everybody knows what's at stake and the levels and the support mechanisms, you know, that they need.
Yeah. And I definitely feel like they get that, the young men and boys that work with us. They know they can come up into the building at any time, see any of us, if they need support, if they need something, and know that they can trust us with that. And I think that that's a very powerful relationship to have with young people as a whole, because there's years worth of young people that we've worked with. They're grown ups now. They got their, you know, some of them got their own children. They're at college, they're at uni, but they can still pick up the phone and say, guess what? Can I come down? Because I need to. And I just feel like that's a very, very powerful part of this work, is keeping those relationships.
Definitely. That's what it's all about, relationships, through every stage of what we're doing. We have to build those connections. And as I said, we all stand here as pillars of the community to help foster that learning, the healing, and making sure that in terms of why they're coming here, yeah, they're able to leave here standing on their own two feet.
Yeah. That's the idea, isn't it? They leave here better than definitely when they came through the door.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you came down to the building on a Friday night, you'd see a different type of therapy going on. It's not your traditional therapy. You know, it's young people beating Ron at FIFA.
Let's not do. Why do you lie? What is this about?
Having those conversations, you know, and he's getting stuck in. You know, as much as you're hearing screaming and running down the corridor because he's just lost a match. Yeah, but
don't believe what you're saying. They might be young boys and young men, but I'll still beat them at FIFA.
Ron,
they need to know how it feels to lose.
I can feel a tournament bubbling. Ron, that's going to be streamed live.
We can call them in next week for this interview for part two, yeah? Yeah, and hear from them directly.
I'm down.
Do you understand? You know? or we can actually video session, you know, and put this out there.
Yeah, we want to see
high.
It.
The stakes are high.
Everyone who's locked in is like, no, we need to know. Can Ron really beat them?
I'm good at FIFA.
Are they
I'm
beating
I'm good at FIFA.
Yeah.
I'm really good at FIFA, you know.
So, yeah, so it's not just your traditional methods, you know. There's all different types of ways that we're engaging with these boys to make them feel comfortable engaging the process.
Yeah, and it's important. Mm-hmm. And for you, Ron, because you talk about coming from a certain type of background with your clinical psychology, to work in this environment with those young people in a different way, how's that been for you?
You know what? I don't think it's been that hard because I think this is what therapy should be like and how it should be. So I guess I've worked in a whole load of different environments, inpatient hospitals, IAP services, which are now kind of, I think they call them talking therapies now.
Okay.
Community mental health teams, CAM services, neuro rehab services, prisons. And I've seen how it is to be a clinician in an NHS service.
Yeah.
I've seen the, I guess, the difficulties in doing meaningful, valuable work that communities feel like they need within those traditional mental health services. So I guess my training was, I really wanted to ensure that I would make my training work for me.
Yeah.
So my first taste of kind of doing this work in the community was a placement at Art Against Knives.
Okay.
Which is an organisation in Barnet. And that was me, I guess, learning and putting myself through the paces of how can I do this type of work in a community, in kind of like a social hub for young people where they come to the centre, but they have me there, the provision of clinical psychology, if they wanted it.
Yeah.
So that was a nice taster into being flexible, being creative in my work. Things that I knew I wanted to do just felt a bit constrained by NHS services.
And that kind of gives you, because I remember when I started out as an IDVA and I was based in the school, and it just gives you, those young people see you there every week.
Mm.
So then they just know. And then the teachers will be saying, yeah, because Jenny's there or Ron's there. Da, da. Mm. And it just makes it all the more nicer. And as Winston said, it comes back to relationships. If you're there all the time, they start to build 100%. That relationship with
you. Yeah, and even if they don't come, just you being there is part of it.
Yeah.
Knowing that actually, Ron's probably due to be there next week.
Yeah.
All right, I'll see him then.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's powerful stuff. So powerful.
Mm.
So, for people that don't know about the research, let them know what the research covers.
So, the research covers, I guess, the research focused on young black men.
Yep.
So, I had 8 young black men who experienced community violence. And I guess community violence might be synonymous with gang violence or serious youth violence.
Yeah.
But in the report, I kind of tend to refer to it as community violence.
Yeah.
And these are young boys, young men who have perpetrated violence, have witnessed it or been a victim of it.
Yeah.
And actually those identities are often encompassed within the same person.
Yeah.
So it was important that the research was able to think about these young men in that light, in that capacity, that we're not saying they're just perpetrators. We're having to hold in mind that you can hold lots of different identities as an individual.
Yeah.
You can be a perpetrator and a victim.
Yeah.
So the research, I guess, really wanted to focus on what young black men understand to be trauma and PTSD. What does it mean to be part of violence day in, day out? How does that impact you? How does that impact you relationally to other people?
Yeah.
But then also exploring their, I guess, their presence within a larger system. So I was thinking about structural violence, thinking about how these young people exist in their environments and how their environments might perpetuate trauma and the trauma responses that they might be experiencing. And then naturally, the police came up in terms of like power and bias. But it was interesting to just hear how the young black men were able to think about their experiences in relation to the police and how racism kind of tied in with that. And then lastly, I guess with my psychology hat on, I really wanted to understand what could therapeutic services look like. What did young black men feel that they needed in order to engage in these services?
Yeah, and I think that's really important.
100%.
Because we spend, you know, we're professionals, we spend a lot of time talking about what we think they need.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of planning and a lot of professionals talking about they need this, it's that, it's that, it's that. But actually, sometimes we need to ask a young person 100%. What works
for you. 100%.
Do you want us to see you at home, or do you want us to see you at school, or do you want us to take you somewhere? Do you want, like, do you want to go and do some activity? Like, there's a lot of things.
Yeah.
That we need to ask them.
Yeah.
Because it is about them at the end of the day. And I think we're missing, we've been missing something by not doing that with them.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Just touching back on the police issue, because if anybody knows where we're based, International House.
Right by the police station.
Right by the police station.
In the heart of Brixton.
Mm. But when we look at it and think to ourselves, oh, they won't come here, because there's so many police here.
Yeah.
But it's a total opposite. They will come here because they now see it as a safe space for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a safe spot for them. So being able to know that if anything happens to them, you know, it's a police station across the road.
Yeah.
It's a weird dynamic, but it works for them.
Yeah. It totally works. Said, a lot of people think, oh, what, you're by the police station? And young people are not going to come there. These young boys are not going to come here. Mm. But you're right. Sometimes can't keep them away.
Definitely. Especially on a Friday night. You know,
it's good. It's testament though, isn't it? Because as you said, if you speak to young people, young boys in particular, young males in particular, and the police, there's a lot to say. There's a lot that's gone on. But them feeling safe enough to come to a building that is next to, because it beats both sides. If something happens, you know you're safe. And actually, you know you're safe because the people that you're here with have made you feel safe.
Yeah, it's powerful.
So what are some of the recommendations that you... some of the recommendations that have come out of the research?
I guess some of the recommendations have been about language... and language that we use. So even the idea of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, I guess the post is often talking about incidents that have already happened.
Yeah.
And then how, I guess, the trauma responses that people might be experiencing as a result of the incident that has happened. But what we don't tend to really think about is the fact that a lot of young black boys, a lot of young black men are still in those situations. So there is no post. They're constantly being triggered by their traumatic situations. Yeah. They're constantly, I guess, being in new traumatic situations.
Yeah.
So actually the word post then becomes a little bit invalid.
Yeah.
Because actually they're constantly in a situation. So there's something about an acknowledgement of that in itself.
Mm.
That PTSD, post, there isn't a post here for a lot of these guys that we work with. There's also something about, I guess, the screening tools that we as clinicians use.
Yeah.
And again, maybe going back to language, this idea that we need to start adapting those so that they make more sense for young black boys, young black men.
Yeah.
At the moment, there is a large population of black boys, black men diagnosed with personality disorders, conduct disorders, ADHD. And actually, why aren't they being diagnosed with PTSD?
Yeah.
That's a big, big issue of mine.
Yeah.
Because when you start to understand the different subsets of what is required for a PTSD diagnosis, these boys are hitting all of those off. Hitting them off.
Yeah. Wow.
And I guess in my work, that's the lens that I'm approaching, that hold on, before we're thinking anything else, let's explore PTSD.
Yeah.
Or just trauma generally.
Yeah, 100%.
Any other recommendations from your perspective, Mr. Good?
I mean, I have my own recommendations for in terms of looking at how UVenice collaborates with StressWorks. Yeah? But looking at, in a sense, is that we are youth workers. We're not, we're not special. I'm not a specialist. Yeah? But we're trying to fuse here two different professions together. Yeah? To be able to provide something that is holistic for them. And that is where, again, where we talk about the relationships, in terms of what we're trying to foster yeah, to yeah. make sure that we're not even ticking the box, but making sure that we are trying to find a way to expedite some of that healing. Yeah, we're trying to find a way to do that, rather than if we're looking at, well, we all know what the waiting lists are like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, but why can't we do that in-house? Why can't we do that in-house? And this is what we're trying to do here.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if they're at crisis point, they need that support right now.
Mm.
Not 3 months, 6 months, 12 months down the line. Yeah? So we need that now. So for me, when we're talking about some of the recommendations, we have to look in-house, yeah, to say, as an organisation, what can we do better, yeah, to support the young people that are coming through the building?
Mm. And actually, not even just... I think what I kind of took away from the anniversary event and the panel discussion was how we as a community need to be doing more of that.
Yeah.
And actually kind of like pooling resources so that it doesn't feel like we're always in isolation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because I guess I'm often feeling as the only clinician around that has one, an interest in this stuff, but two, again, that expertise to actually do something about it.
Sometimes it goes off, sometimes it doesn't.
Oh,
so we'll go back from the top. It passed for, I was like, oh, it's not going to happen. I won't stop you. That's all right. You can go just all right.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what I'm saying. No, I guess the importance of us as a community doing some of that stuff and actually us being able to pull the resources that we have. Because at the moment, I guess it can often feel like we're in isolation. That as a clinician, I'm often feeling that, one, I'm the only person that has an interest in this stuff, I guess, around PTSD trauma, specifically around community violence. It can often feel lonely, which then means, I guess, it often feels like there's a lot on my shoulders. And Winston probably feels the same, actually, a lot on his shoulders.
Yeah, definitely now, because if you think that now I'm beginning to understand it, yeah? Remember, I haven't trained as a clinician. So for me to understand, and even when Ron talks to me, I have to say to him sometimes, you have to go back and start and speak to me in plain English. Because their terminologies and stuff like that, I need to understand it and break it down into our world.
Yeah.
You know, for me to see, well, how does that align? Yeah. How am I going to introduce that way of thinking and that language to a young person? So,
and it's important that they understand
exactly
fully.
Yeah.
What the conversations and topics are going to be and how deep it's going to get for them.
Yeah, because if I don't understand it, I can't put it in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, and then, as Ron has said to me before, it's not for us to kind of like define what their trauma is. Yeah? They would tell us that if we give it to them in simple terms. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, even you know, looking forward and, you know, looking at different ways of how we're trying to get them to understand their thoughts, feelings and emotions around trauma, we're having to do things in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I don't want to give out too many secrets of what we've got planned for the future, you know, but we're trying to simplify the language around trauma, PTSD, so young people understand, you know, once they come for an assessment or a formalisation, you know, whatever the terminology that they use, I want to be able to express it to them in a way that they can understand it better, rather than just thinking, you know, as Shocker said last week, that they just think I'm mad.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I think one of my questions was around, you know, when we talk about mental health assessments and mental health and well-being with young people, they automatically go, yeah, but there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not, as you said, not mad. There's nothing wrong with my mind. I'm good. And then just not realizing that that's not actually what we're talking about. We're talking about, are you eating? Are you sleeping? What time you go to bed? What are you listening to? What time are you coming in? Who are you around? They're not even thinking it has anything to do with any environmental physical stuff. It's just straight, but I'm not mad, there's nothing. Who told you that I need something?
I mean, that's a societal problem though. And I guess from a society perspective, it actually is worse for men, because I guess there's a narrative that exists around men that they need to be robust, they need to constantly be strong. Mm. And actually by showing mental health is not even vulnerability, but I guess there is an idea that if I show my mental health, that's me being vulnerable. Yeah. And for some people, vulnerability equals death.
Yeah.
Mm. For a lot of the young people we work with, they can't be vulnerable. They can't be be viewed to be vulnerable, because actually that could kill them.
Yeah.
So I guess with the young people that we work with, there's a lot of barriers to them wanting to even explore the idea of mental health, actually.
Yeah. And also, it's a scary topic, isn't it, if you're a young person?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And
then,
you know, now we're starting to learn more, and I suppose something for me in the new year is how many young black males have grown up with their mums being in mental institutions and having to see the process of that and how deep that is for you, because we're starting to see a lot more young carers who are caring for their parent or their guardian.
Mm.
And it could be mental health, could be, you know, drink, drugs, so illness.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something, again, that I feel like we need to start talking about as
a community. I agree.
Because that's heavy.
Yeah, I agree.
And there was quite a few of those conversations going about last week, where maybe three or four people would realise that one had had this, one's dad was this, one's mum had been there, one's gran had been. And that's a big conversation, because we don't talk about that.
And it's a big conversation that needs to be had, because when you step foot, I'll never forget the first day I started working at Lambeth Hospital, full of black people.
Mm.
And it shocks me that you have an environment that is full of black people, and yet the black community is never talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the fact that there are so many young black men on inpatient wards.
Yeah.
So many that have got to a point of crisis where ambulances, the police have put them on a certain section where they're now kind of forced to be on an inpatient ward. And these are conversations we're not having, because actually we're just viewing these people as, oh, they're mad.
Mm. Yeah.
So we are also reinforcing some of that stigma and those ideas.
Yeah.
Which then reinforces why young black boys don't want to talk about their mental health.
No.
Why would I talk about this stuff when you might think that I'm mad, which then might equal me entering a mental health hospital?
Yeah.
It can't run.
Yeah.
So we need to almost kind of like dispel some of the myths about mental health, that it doesn't equal you will be in a mental health hospital. It just means as human beings, like, we go through things in our life that just
our body and mind can only take 100%, so much.
100%.
And I think that's why someone like Shocker, his story is so powerful.
Mm.
Because, you know, he's talking about being sectioned four times, and he knows that it may happen again. But he's able to deal with it a bit better and actually explain it to people and feel more comfortable and more confident. And that's a power in itself.
100%, yeah.
To reach that point where you can do that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's actually been quite a scary experience from that first time.
Mm.
And, you know, and he goes on to say, you know what, now he understands the process.
Yeah.
You know, so for the next time, he knows how to deal with it better.
Yeah.
The third time, he knows how to deal with it even better again.
And asking for help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time he finds himself in that kind of situation, he knows what he needs to do to ease that for himself.
Yeah.
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 Mm. It's heavy.
It's deep, guys.
Mm.
So deep. And the time's going really, really quick. So we've got probably 10 minutes or so, yeah?
Mm.
So we touched on the research life of a top boy. I'm not even going to say to you, like, what is to come. Because I know that you guys are still spinning and reeling from 100%, last week.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And I don't even think the feet have touched the ground yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a little bit of time. For the momentum is still going, and people are still talking,
And people still reaching out, and people going to
what's next? Come to this. Can we have some books? Can we have some packs? Can we have some whatever? So that's. So I'm not going to put you guys on the spot and say that, but I am going to say, like, to the boys and young men that are part of that research, what would you like to say? Because I know they hear from you, and I know they still see you, and I know that, you know, you are going to be part of their lives for quite a while to come, because there's so much more to come. But is there anything personal that you would like to say to them? Because, you know, once this goes up on Spotify, it's there forever. And at any time, they can come back and listen and remember what's been said and what's been created from their lives.
I think we've got a... We have to be kind of like blessed to know that they've been vulnerable enough, you know, and Ron used the phrase, to bear their souls to us, you know, within that kind of like privileged position, to be able to use their stories to elevate the work of what we're doing, but also give them opportunities that if they want to share their stories on, and to raise awareness through what they've gone through, that we're able to do that.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, so as I said, you know, for me, some of the boys have been here 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
You know, some even longer, you know, so they know that that door is open to them regardless.
Yeah.
Whoever's in that office, they know they're going to get that same level of treatment. So for me, you know, I just need to say to them, thank you for giving us the opportunity to be able to use their stories to build on this research and take our work to another level. So, you know, the boys of tomorrow, the next generations, we're using this, to be able to work with them as even better.
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to, you know, give their voices and their experiences some meaning.
Yeah, I would agree. Just thank you, ultimately. Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Winston said. I guess from a psychologist's perspective, it's been refreshing to talk to young black men about their experiences and see that. Because I mentioned before that I've been in a whole bunch of different therapeutic environments and have never seen black men. So it was refreshing to... I guess to see that vulnerability, that trust, actually, that I was here to listen to them, actually, and actually do something with their voice.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm often thinking about legacy. Like, this is their legacy. This isn't just ours. This is their legacy.
Yeah.
Like, they've created this.
Yeah.
So thank you. And I guess just a sense that I want them to feel that they can own this.
Yeah.
I want there to be a sense of ownership for them.
Thank you. And for anyone who is listening that's thinking, I've been thinking about therapy for a little while. Not sure if I'm ready, but now I'm, you know, I'm listening to this conversation about the research and what these young men and boys have come out with and how it's led to them being supported, knowing a little bit more about their thoughts and feelings, like from inside their head, inside their body out. Knowing how to deal with things, they've now got some of the tools. They've now got long-term life support from two strong black males in the community, and they will have more strong black males in the community standing up for them. Even though everyone doesn't know who they are, there are others that are going to start standing up and saying, "Nah, let's pull together, let's start to support." Because we have heard so many times that, especially for men and boys, that getting therapy is just a whole process in itself. And sometimes you might talk to the wrong person and the wrong person saying, "Oh, you don't need therapy, man, you're good." So for that young male listening to this now thinking, yeah, I might need to think about, because we're talking about, you know, PTSD, we're talking about witnessing community trauma, we're talking about, you know, being a victim of possibly a traumatic experience. And there's people sitting down in their house going, "No, I haven't spoken to no one about this, that and the third." What would you say to encourage the community to start thinking about looking after yourself and starting there?
For me, I would say reach out to us.
Yeah.
The first step is a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you can understand, you know, as Ron said, what is happening to you,
yeah.
how it makes you feel, you know. And then we can put you in touch with
yeah.
support services, you know, that can support you in that process. You know, even when we, you know, last week, all the guys on the panel were saying, we're available.
Yeah.
We are available. Yeah. We're here.
Yeah.
You know,
and people are already reaching out to
exactly.
them anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're here. Reach out to us.
Yeah.
You know, and take that first step.
Yeah.
Mm, I agree. There's something about, well, I guess we were joking at the start a little bit about homework, or not homework, but research. Mm. And if therapy is of interest, I would really employ people to research yes. different types of therapy, like gain a better understanding around what therapy can look like. What I wouldn't want people to do is just jump into therapy.
Yes, of
because
course.
If you do that, you might become scarred or jaded by the fact that actually it wasn't a good therapist.
Mm.
I'm not here to say that all therapists are good, because we're not.
Yeah,
there are
yeah.
some terrible therapists. There are some therapists that will create harm. So this is where I really want it to be quite a thoughtful process, that when you are seeking somebody out, that you're thinking about this stuff. And I guess that might go back to what Winston's saying. Maybe it is to just reach out to us.
Mm. yeah.
Like, we know this stuff. And I think
yeah.
we've evidenced that we do this in a sensitive way that shows understanding, that shows trust.
Yes.
And then we could possibly be putting people in the right direction. But yeah, or even if it's not us, it's somebody that you trust.
Yeah.
There might be other clinicians out there that we're not aware of that might be doing good work.
Mm.
I guess at this moment in time, we're not aware of people who have that interest in trauma, PTSD and community violence. But if those people are out there, we would also love to connect yeah. with other clinicians,
yeah.
other mental health professionals who are, yeah. who might want to do this work, don't know how to get into it.
Yeah.
Again, we're here. We're here.
100%. Guys, it's been amazing.
Mm,
did save the last of the month.
Time has flown, though. This is mad.
We could sit here for a little bit longer.
Yeah,
do you know that. What I mean?
Mm.
But it's been amazing to just have you both talking back, because we talked about this a while back now. Now we're here. It's like 1 year.
Mm.
There's so much things that have progressed, and I'm really excited for you. And look, quite recently winning an award. Tell us about that before you go.
She's not talking to me, you know.
So that was a nice feeling. I think it's always a nice feeling when your own community recognizes the work that you do.
Yeah,
ultimately. So came out of the blue. Like, it was just even nice to have been considered
yeah.
as kind of therapist of the year. And then to actually win it, I guess, just affirmed the work that we're doing. Like,
yeah.
it really affirms that I'm on the right direction.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I guess I've taken a massive gamble, like not working in the NHS, like really wanting to embed myself in the community, and often feeling that I'm the only clinical psychologist around, actually. So
yeah.
in that sense, it's a big gamble, because I often feel a little bit isolated. But so it's nice that the community recognises and sees the work that we're attempting to do.
Yeah.
And it's nice that the research is, yeah, getting its flowers.
Yeah, 100%.
And you getting your flowers.
Exactly.
And you getting your flowers.
Yeah.
You know?
I need to get better at that, taking that. Yeah, yeah. Mm. But yeah, we move.
But it's good that you're, you know, take time with it, innit?
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Because it is a lot. And, you know, you're just doing something you enjoy. But to other people, this is like... this is like we're starting to kick some doors
down now.
You know, and there's a lot of young boys and men, like young black boys and men, that are going to like start to look at what's being done for them and for the future of them as well. Because, you know, this is for, you know, as you said, legacy. This is for the future.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
And well done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Ron.
It's been an amazing, I tell you, this is the last of our 3 year celebration shows, and I'm actually really, really proud of you guys. It's been amazing.
Mm, we've done a lot.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Now, for anyone who's locked in, who's thinking, all right, reach out, yeah? Where are we reaching out to?
That's a good shout.
Where are they going to find you? Fair, both?
Anywhere. Twitter, Instagram.
They're very active on the socials.
I mean, Winston's more active than me. Boy, this guy is active.
Let you know, these lot are very active on Twitter and LinkedIn. The activity is popping.
Yeah. So I would say just hit us up on there. I mean, I have people that would DM me on Instagram or Twitter just asking about things. Like, we're here. Yeah.
Love that.
Well, if anyone wants to find me, please get in touch with my agent.
Jenny Steele. Jenny Steele. I saw that one coming.
This guy.
He's just sent all the work to me.
Or you can hit us up on all the socials at Mr. Good. On Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn.
And you can download the research.
The research.
At juvenis.org.
Yeah, juvenis.org.
Yeah. .uk. Still there.
.uk. It's still there for now. New website coming. So, yeah, we're upgrading bits and pieces, the work, the research. There's lots more to come.
So 2025, what are we saying, guys?
Boy, it's going to be a madness.
It is going to be a madness. But there's lots of things in the pipeline. Mm. Yeah, you know, and hopefully we'll be back to share more.
Most definitely.
You know, and look out on the socials for places where we'll be. And how we upgrade some of the research going forward. So yeah, but that's all for now. That's all for now.
Got a little exclusive there. Squeeze that one out. Yeah. Thanks again, guys. Well, this is Reach LDN at Radio Shagel. Jenny Steele has still got it. Talk show shouts out to management at Reach London Radio. Shouts out to Richie Rich in the background. And thanks again to our sponsor, Winston Good at Juvenis. Dr. Ron Dodsrow, award-winning.
Glad to be here. Glad to be as usual.
And catch us back next week. We're out.